and doing in the Supreme Court? Stay tuned and find out on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to Pacific Underground, a show by Asian and Pacific Islanders in Portland, Oregon. I'm Jenny Okuyama, your host for this month. In this episode, we have two interviews to share with you. The first interview is with Douglas Choi, the lawyer turned educator who started the Portland Underground Grad School, also known as PUGS. Then we speak with the dance rock band The Slants about their recent Supreme Court case and take a listen to their new album, The Band That Must Not Be Named. Also for the next hour, we'll be playing music that helps sum up our feelings here at Pacific Underground about life in America these days. First on the playlist is an old favorite of mine. It's commonly known as the Sukiyaki song. Most people think of it as a love song, or probably a breakup song. But the original Japanese lyrics are actually about that feeling you have after your protest against the government failed. Literally, like that's literally what it's about. So here's the original 1961 recording of Kyu Sakamoto's hit, Ue Omuite Aruko. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Was Ue Omuite Aruko, also known as the Sukiyaki song, with crooner Kyu Sakamoto. Up next, we have an interview with Douglas Choi, creator of the Portland Underground Grad School, also known as PUGS. Douglas founded the adorably named school as a way to provide grad school level courses at prices that people can actually afford due to their use of radical pricing. If you've never taken a PUGS class, I suggest you check it out. I've taken one before, and let me just say, that class was held while sitting around a fire on the back porch of a bar. Producer Tabitha Teo spoke with Douglas Choi to learn more about the mission of PUGS and to learn why conservatives are always wrong.
So tell us about what Portland Underground Graduate School is. When did you start it?
Yeah, Portland Underground Grad School. I started it 2 years ago because I'm someone who really loves school. So every year I'd be thinking, oh, I want to go back to school, like get an MBA or like a master's in philosophy, or I want to learn more about virtual reality. And it never made sense because it costs, you know, $40,000, $50,000 a year for a degree I didn't need. And it would actually disrupt my life. Like I'd have to move somewhere. So I created the thing I wanted. I'm a lawyer, so I invited all my friends, rented a community room, and I taught criminal law, how to think like a lawyer. And we did 4 weeks of that, and people were super enthusiastic, and they started saying, oh, I want an arts history class, or I want a course about comic book history. And so all of a sudden, we just started doing more courses, and now it's ballooned after 2 years to 6 courses and a couple workshops a month.
Yeah, I was looking on the PUGS website, and yeah, I definitely love the variety of classes that y'all offer. And they're really interesting sounding, too.
Yeah, I think the cool thing is because we're outside of what I call the educational industrial complex, you can offer whatever you want, right? It's not for credit. It's for the love of learning. So people offer courses and, you know, my instructors come from the community on stuff that's super interesting because no one's trying to fulfill any requirements.
And then how much money do these courses cost?
Yeah, our base for 4 weeks and then our workshops are around $60. Oh, I should say that we have a radical pricing policy. Which,
I was just about to ask about.
Yeah, so our radical pricing policy is that, again, because we believe that education should be for everybody, if you can't even afford the $15 an hour, you can ask for a scholarship, and we will get you into class at a lower price. And because of that, we also ask people who make more than the basic wage to contribute to the PUG Scholarship Fund so that we have a true community.
Then do you seek any grants or outside funding from PUGS, or is it all funded from, like, the tuition?
It's all funded from the tuition right now.
Wow, that's really great that you can be, like, independently, like, self-sufficient and self-funded like that.
Yeah, and I think part of it is we don't do things like try and get accreditation, and we're not. There are so many things that cause school to become expensive, and by avoiding those things, we're trying to offer something that is for everybody.
What about then, like, reading material or books or supplies? Is it all provided as part of the tuition?
Yep. It's what? Mostly just links and reading materials from the internet and PDFs. And that's part of the idea that instructors intentionally don't require you to spend more money than the tuition.
Wow, that is really cool. Pugs are my second favorite breed, and when I figured out the acronym for Portland Underground Graduate School, it's like, Pugs!
What's your favorite breed?
My favorite breed are Chihuahuas.
You like the small dogs.
I do. Well, I wouldn't really say it's like a big dog, small dog verse thing, because I actually used to not like Chihuahuas, but then my family got Chihuahuas, and I just really like their personality, because they're really small, but like they will fight you, despite how big you are. They will fight you, and I guess you can kind of say I take a little bit of like personal inspiration from that kind of attitude, because like I'm just one person. But I will try my best to fight the establishment, no matter how big or challenging it is.
Well, then you should start some organization whose acronym is Chihuahua.
I would love that. What's your favorite breed of dog?
Well, I grew up with dogs. I grew up with a Doberman, who I loved, and then I grew up with a Lhasa Apso, who I loved too.
Aww.
Yeah, I think I like dogs more than I like people.
Yeah, since the election, I've been preferring to hang out with my Chihuahuas than like people. But how do you think the inauguration and or what is now the Trump administration will affect Pugs and your work?
Well, we are the Portland Underground Grad School. By the way, I love it that I'm on Pacific Underground. You know, there's something that very natural there. Yeah, I think since the election, we've become more explicitly countercultural. We always have social justice courses, but this month we have two activist courses.
Yeah, there's like navigating white spaces and something about the white history of Portland, or was it Portland or Oregon in general?
Of Oregon, yeah. That course is called South of the North.
That's right, yeah.
And it's the racial history of Oregon, which is pretty frightening.
Yeah. Maybe not appreciate's the right word, but I thought it was very, like you were saying, confrontational, that the image that you chose for that was like a KKK march.
Actually, that photo is a picture of the head of the KKK meeting publicly with Portland City Council
members. Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's more than just a march. It is sort of the explicit acknowledgement and approval of the KKK from Portland.
Do you know when that photo was taken?
1921, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Other than a desire to learn, do you have any experience teaching yourself?
Yeah, before I started Pugs, I worked in education and was a school teacher for many years. And so, I've done a lot of roles in education. I ran education programs for adults at a big nonprofit downtown.
No, you were mentioning that our educational industrial complex.
That's right, yeah.
What do you think is missing in our education system in, like, either in higher education or K through 12 primary school?
Well, I think accessibility is the biggest thing. I don't know if we would describe it as accessibility is missing, but the sense that, well, education is a human right. So if education is a human right, there's no way you can make people pay $40,000 a year for it. So that's the first thing, accessibility. The second thing is we live in a world like with 19th century assumptions about education. This idea that, you know, you get educated, you know, you're sort of an empty vessel and you learn certain things and after that you're done, right? Like, you know, you go to college and you've learned a certain skill set and then after that you don't have to learn anymore. And so you're done in your early 20s. You may go to grad school and learn another skill set, like being a lawyer or being a doctor. But then you're done there, too. But I think we all, especially with how the world's changing right now, we all have to be lifelong learners. One, just as a necessity. But two, I'm just someone who believes, and I think a lot of people believe, that learning is a pleasure. Like, it's expansive as for you to be learning all the time.
What kind of like hole or need do you think Pugs is fulfilling?
Well, I think it's the education hole for people who love learning. And, you know, one of the things I thought about for myself, and I think with a lot of people, is it's, in theory, you know, it's easy to learn by yourself. You know, if you're an autodidact, right? Like there's the library, there's the internet, right? There's YouTube. There's any number of ways for you to learn by yourself. But as a teacher, and I think just by experience for myself, people are not, most people aren't autodidacts. Like, most of us are social learners. We learn by conversation, we learn in community, and it's just more fun communicating with other people and doing something together. And I would also say, like, I think that Pugs also fills a niche of, I think in modern society, it's harder and harder to find community. And so we have to create ways for us to get together around a third thing. And so I think our courses are those third things. Like, you know, you can go to a bar, or you could even go to lectures at OMSI or Powell's, but if you don't get to interact with other people, you don't connect with them. So Pugs is a way for people to connect. And I think the connection is just as important as learning.
That is actually a great segue to one of my questions about, how you hope you can build community and also like social engagement with Pugs. And also just the work that you do in general.
Yeah, I want people to feel connected to each other at Pugs. And so part of it, their courses are 4 weeks long typically because of that. so that you know that you're going to see each other the following week and the week after that. We have a pug tradition in each course that you go out after the first class and the last class of each course. So you get to know each other. A lot of instructors actually go out after each course or after each class, so that people can really like socialize. We have Pugs Happy Hours once a month, and we have Pugs Fest coming up in April, which is the one-day festival of ideas.
Are people ever encouraged to bring their dogs or an actual pug?
You know, we did it last year for the first time, and we thought, oh, we should try and get pugs at the event. But table space, I don't think they would have looked too well at that.
Can you tell us about what Pugs has coming up? What classes and courses you're offering next?
Sure. In February coming up, we have a course called Navigating White Spaces, which is a course for people of color only, talking about what does it mean to be a person of color in Portland specifically, and how do we create our own healing spaces outside of a white-dominated Portland. So that's Navigating White Spaces, which I think is going to be pretty awesome. We also have Drawing Plants, which is actually a drawing course based on observation of the natural flora around the city. So that's both an arts course and a science course, which I think is pretty awesome. Love in the Time of Barbarians, which is about depictions of love in Western art over history, specifically the Middle Ages and the Renaissance. And so how does art influence the way we see love? Food, Social Identities, and Justice. So this is about food justice, and it's going to be held at the People's Food Co-op, which is great. We have What Health Science Research Should I Trust? Because, you know, there's any number of articles and pieces about, you know, this is good for your health or this is terrible for your health. And Jeff Rubin, who has a PhD, will be talking about, like, how do you actually know what news you should follow? And then lastly, we have South of the North, which is the course about Oregon racial history. And, like, you know, Oregon was set up to be a white only state. It was literally illegal to be a person of color. And then lastly, we have a couple workshops. You know, those were our 4-week courses, but we also have a How to Teach workshop, which I'm leading, which is on February 11th. So that's just one day. And then we're going to have Pizza School coming up in March, which is...
Are people going to learn how to make a pizza?
Yeah, it's at Handsome Pizza, which is at 16th Ooh. And Killingsworth. And you learn how to make a pizza from... like literally the flour to actually pulling it out of the wood-fired oven.
Oh, wow.
And you get to eat your pizza, too.
Oh, wow. That sounds really fun. So you also wrote a book.
Yeah.
And it's called Why Are Conservatives Always Wrong? What inspired you to write Why Are Conservatives Always Wrong?
I'm a history teacher, so I thought about history in terms of, you know, that Martin Luther King Jr. quote that Obama took, which is actually comes from the abolitionist movement about the arc of a moral universe bending towards justice. And so what I did is I just did a research book on what did people used to say about things, right? Like that we don't debate anymore. Like, you know, if women... that
some of the quotes are crazy.
What are some of your favorite quotes?
I like the quote where Reagan said, trees cause more pollution than cars.
Right. So, I mean, they're like more recent quotes, but they're like quotes of what people used to say about Black people or Native Americans or immigrants from 100, 200 years ago. And you realize, you know, there's a history of oppression that is really painful. But at the same time, if you flip it, you realize things undoubtedly have gotten better, and it's a long arc. But being able to understand your history and realizing, oh, you know, this is what people used to say, and then someone had to change that, sort of gives me hope for the present. Because, you know, like what people used to say about transgender people even 5 or 10 years ago is no longer acceptable. You know, like gay marriage, oh my goodness, like when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, being gay was totally impermissible. And now it's a generally accepted thing in the United States. So I think if you look at history, there is always reason for optimism.
How can people get the book?
Well, they're going to have to contact me. I pulled the books from Amazon because Amazon's got a weird selling structure. And I decided to pull it off the shelf. So I'm actually currently not selling it in bookstores, except for local bookstores here.
Why did you feel like you had to pull the book?
So the number one thing about selling a book is publicity. You know, they say that you don't make money selling books unless you're already famous. And so it costs money to warehouse your books. So that's the first thing. And the second thing, so it costs money. And then also you have to spend a lot of time trying to market your book. And if you're not famous, that's hard too, right? Actually, so the funny story is I pulled the book from the warehouse on election day thinking, oh, Hillary's going to be elected. No one's going to want to read this book anymore. I should have kept the book in an inventory.
And the Electoral College happened.
Yeah, so I'm a stupid man.
Do you think you might have to come out with a volume 2 full of Donald Trump quotes over the next 4 years?
I don't think anyone wants to read more Donald Trump quotes right now.
I certainly don't.
That was Tabitha Teo speaking with Douglas Choi, founder of the Portland Underground Grad School and author of the book, Why Are Conservatives Always Wrong? To find out more about PUGS and its radical pricing, go to their website at www.pugspdx.com. You're listening to Pacific Underground. Whether or not you attended or even supported the recent Women's March on Washington, if you're on the socials, you've probably seen a viral video of the artist known as Milk leading a choir in her song Quiet, or as it's also being referred to, I Can't Keep Quiet. The video's been viewed millions of times. And while live a cappella singing is impressive, I personally prefer the studio version. So here's Quiet by Milk.
Put on your face, know your place. Shut up and smile, don't spread your legs. I could do that, but no one knows me, no one ever will. If I don't say something, if I just lie still, would I be that monster, scare them all away? If I let them hear all I have to say, I can't keep quiet, no. I can't keep quiet, no. Or anyone. Anymore. 'Cause no one knows me.
As America gets ready for the next 4 years, the Portland dance rock band The Slants went to Washington, D.C. recently to see the final stages of their trademark case. If you're unfamiliar with the case, look for the TED Talk given by The Slants' bass guitarist and founder, Simon Tam, because we're not going to get into all the legal details here. But the short version goes something like this. Like most rock bands, The Slants applied to trademark their band name. But unlike most bands, their application was denied due to their name being considered disparaging. And my fingers are doing gigantic air quotes around the word disparaging. Basically, the trademark office was saying that the name The Slants could be considered racist. So the band took their case to court, and 7 years later, they fought their way to the Supreme Court. And while recently visiting our nation's capital, The Slants managed to play a couple of shows, do some interviews with CBS, HBO, and every other media outlet in the world, and sit in front of the highest justices in the land, all while landing an invite to the Asian Pacific American Advisory Committee inaugural ball. And in case you've never heard of them, they're Trump's handpicked committee to advise on the AAPI community. The band ultimately declined the invitation. Producer Cadence Schlesinger and I got a chance to speak with the entire band while they were in D.C. So we asked them to share some thoughts about their decision not to play the inaugural ball.
You know, for me, I think it's great. I love speaking to groups that I don't agree with, because I feel like that's how you advance the conversation on justice and equality. If we just simply blocked them or ignored them, then it doesn't move that conversation forward. They just would see us as progressive elitists who don't actually want to work together. And so I thought it was a good chance to actually try and work with people on who have similar values but interpret how we execute on them differently, to actually work on issues that matter to our community. You know, and that was kind of my particular take on it. And I also like playing devil's advocate a little bit. I like kind of teasing out, seeing what people believe and why they believe in it. So I was not like morally opposed. I didn't have this gut, like knee-jerk reaction of, no, I want nothing to do with them. I want nothing to do with Trump. I was like more like, tell me more.
Hey, this is Ken. For me personally, you know, as much work as we've done with, you know, with all these groups, for me, I didn't think that right now would be the best time to essentially be affiliated with either or. And me personally, I don't know, I guess for me, I don't choose a side. And for me, I just say I'm a musician.
Mm-hmm. And try to stay like apolitical, I guess. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically. Just focus on the art.
This is Yuya. And I definitely see Simon's side in working with the other side to try and make a true difference rather than just ignoring everything right off the bat. But also, for me, there's a lot of people that I know that are going to be affected by a lot of these policies that may be handed down from this new administration, healthcare, you know, or really any sort of discrimination that's going to be handed down. I know a lot of people that are going to be truly, truly hurt by that. And I just, it's hard for me when they ask something like that, because then we could automatically be affiliated with that group, even if that's not, you know, what we went there for. If somebody looks up The Slants and, you know, saw that we played a Republican inaugural ball, a lot of people, I believe, would then associate us with, you know, that party, and then not want to support us because of that and because of their views.
Yo, this is Joe. I'm somewhere in between all of the guys, but basically I actually originally said to Simon, like, I'd do it if we could stage some sort of protest or if we could say something to them. But after Simon explained it, it sounded like we're just going to be like table dressing and they weren't paying us, and it was just going to be like, oh, you should be, you know, glad to be here kind of event, like, because we're celebrating this thing. And so I wasn't really a fan of that. I'm definitely not a fan of the administration. But I do, you know, I do want to be in the center of something where we could have a voice and we could be not just going along with everybody else. So that would be great to have a conversation with them. It didn't feel like that was going to be the case.
Mm-hmm. No, they didn't say anything about that part.
And speaking of having a voice and like having that conversation, do you feel like you as a band have been asked as you know, a plurality of people, not just like one singular entity, what this experience of going to the Supreme Court and being invited to play at this inaugural ball has been like? Or has it kind of been like, all right, come up with a consensus as a band, as the four of you, and speak as one? Because that was something that Jenna and I were just talking about before this. And we were really curious to kind of hear what that experience has been like with all of this press attention that's been focused on you guys recently.
What do you mean by having a consensus?
I guess, has there been pressure put on you to speak as a band, or does it feel like people have been asking all of you as individuals, as a part of this band, what this experience is like and what your thoughts are?
This is Simon. I think most people just ask me because I've been a part of this since the beginning. Everyone else in the band walked into an existing trademark fight that was established years before they were. They're walking into a fight where there's a name of the band already established, the concept of the band, its social justice values were in place long before they walked in. So oftentimes folks tend to ask for me when we do interviews, but it certainly doesn't mean that the other band members don't have an opinion or feelings or experiences of their own.
Who would be the newest member of your band? That's Yuya?
Yep.
What was that like to come in relatively, well, I mean, just very, very recently into the band and knowing, you know, kind of where the trajectory of this case was going? Having been aware of the case before you entered the band, did you kind of have opinions going into the band about the trademark case at all?
When I first came into this band, I did know about the trademark a little bit. I didn't, you know, go too deep into it, but I did know about it a little bit. And I also wanted to be a part of something bigger, something that I was going to be able to help. And if I can even play a small part in this to help all the marginalized communities, minorities, LGBT community, if I can help in any way, I would love to. And, you know, being in this band is that opportunity. I can be, you know, part of that voice that unfortunately not a lot of our community has. They don't have the resources, or they just don't have the wherewithal to, you know, fight this like we do. And so I'm glad that we're coming together as a band and just being able to go out to the Supreme Court and keep the government accountable.
What about others? Does anybody else have any sort of feelings to share on, like, what it's been like to come into this band and knowing that this would be part of your experience?
Yeah, this is Joe. I definitely joined this band for the music. I had made a life choice at that point to sort of choose between making movies or working on music, and I was like, I just want to play music. And then, of course, when I joined the band, I had already heard about this court case and found out that they didn't have anybody working on a documentary or, you know, doing anything that documented this case other than, like, you know, like little news stories or student films. So then I was kind of sucked into it, and all of a sudden I became very interested in this entire case. And, yeah, everything you said was, you know, was what I felt too. Like, I wanted to be a voice, I wanted to help out. But at the same time, from, like, an artistic standpoint, I wanted the music to stand on its own. I wanted to make sure that the band is about music. We're not just an activist band. We're a band that does activism. And then for the, you know, the more Supreme Court side and this whole fighting for this right side, I kind of separated it into the film part of my, you know, my mind. And so now I'm just seeing that as two different things. I care about the music and I care about the activism, but they're almost two separate things for me.
So when do we get to see the documentary?
Oh, it's going to be well after this whole case is done, you know? Like, I want it to be more than just, like, opportunistic, catching the event as it's happening and then sort of releasing it right when it's, you know, done. I originally thought about that when we did the court case last year. It felt like, outside of some lawyers and obviously our fans and people that care about us, that were interested, I think the bigger story is the whole system. It's this idea of language, free speech, marginalized rights, and all of that is not going to be something that I can just catch, you know, along the way. And I also want to go on tour and play music. So basically, the documentary is probably looking at 2018 now, at the earliest. I might release, you know, various little pieces in 2017, including just like the tour blog or of what we're doing right now. And we actually just released something today on Meow Meow. It's like a short piece of Simon basically walking around DC getting hounded by reporters and people. So it's pretty cool.
Hey, you just spoiled the ending.
What?
You just spoiled
the ending. I didn't spoil the ending. No, no, the ending is not spoiled because it's a funny little piece. So anyways, like we want to definitely share with, you know, our audience, our fans, our supporters of what's going on, but eventually I also want to tell a story that's a little more complete that may even involve Simon's life story, you know, or everybody in this band's life story. So that's what we have to look forward to.
When you guys are at the Supreme Court, I'm assuming that it'll be your attorney speaking on, or do you guys get to say anything at all? Because that would be just so awesome.
Unfortunately, we don't get to say anything. They barely guaranteed us seats to be able to go into our own hearing.
What?
they do not guarantee seating for the band because I'm the plaintiff. And yeah, like it took a lot of phone calls and emails by our attorneys to convince the court to allow us to appear as a band because they've never had a band before the Supreme Court before.
Sorry if we tried too hard to take some power back for ours. The language of oppression will lose through education until the words can't hurt us again. Sorry if you take offense. Silence will not make amends.
Right now, you're listening to From the Heart, a track from The Slants' new album, The Band That Must Not Be Named. As you can tell from the words, it's an open letter to the trademark office. Real quick about one of your interviews, of the many interviews that you've been doing, that I saw, because, you know, like, we're friends on Facebook, and I geeked out with you when I saw that you had been contacted by Nina Totenberg from NPR.
Yeah, that's yeah, I mean, Joe was there when we were walking to the NPR offices, and I could definitely say, I mean, he knows. I was like, oh my God, it's Nina Totenberg. And I, you know, I was just naming off a bunch of reporters. I was like, I got the NPR One app right now. And when we walked in, she introduced us to Robert Siegel, and I was trying to contain myself. I was like, I listen to All Things Considered all the time. But it was cool.
Oh my God, because, like, that's so radio nerd fun. There's like, that moment was so exciting to read that post.
Where Simon is in the booth with Nina, or as Nina walked out for a moment, and I was just like, "Hey, Simon, how are you feeling?" And you look in his eyes, and he's just glazed over and like joy, and he couldn't even understand what I was saying. He's just like, "Oh!" Eventually, he's just like, "NPR!" And he's so happy.
Yeah. Oh, it's cool. We're actually going back there in a couple of days. So.
I wonder who else you'll meet. Oh, that's so exciting.
Have you guys seen the newsroom?
Like the HBO newsroom?
TV show, but it feels like that because there's just all these like desks, all these people working, and they're all like in these like stand-up cubicles, and everybody's like running around. There's like these giant tickers going across.
CNN is everywhere.
Yeah, CNN was everywhere. They had like Run the Jewel there earlier in the day, and then they're going to have they had Killer Mike there earlier in the day. They're going to have Killer Mice later, and there was other stuff, crazy stuff. I don't know what was going on.
And we're like, oh, Nina Totenberg has a cubicle. She doesn't get her own office.
She has cubicles and bobbleheads. How cool is that?
Tons of bobbleheads.
Like Supreme Court justices, old ones.
Like every single one, yeah.
That's cool. Congratulations for making it all the way inside NPR building.
Thank you.
So, if you're a pop culture fan, you probably know what The Band That Must Not Be Named is referencing. Besides being a nod to their trademark case, The Slants' new album title is also a take on everyone's favorite Harry Potter villain. While talking to the band, we discovered that their Harry Potter appreciation extends to their smartphones. Here they are talking about the possible Harry Potter / Pokemon Go game we all want to happen soon.
I heard they're going to do a Harry Potter Go now, too.
What?
Yeah. Did y'all hear about that? Yeah, Harry Potter Go. It should be fun.
What are you going to catch?
I don't know. I just saw ads about that.
So spells? Like,
really?
So do you just do you use Pokeballs to catch Harry Potter characters?
They would
maybe
probably
like a snitch or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Either that, or you might catch the beast, like in conjunction of Fantastic Beasts and where to find them.
A wild Ron Weasley just appeared. A wild Ron Weasley just escaped.
So common.
I want to see like one of you holding up your smartphones while you're sitting in the Supreme Court with all the justices in front of you, and you guys are like trying to find Pokemon.
I've already tried asking, and evidently we can't bring any kind of cell phone or anything inside. Otherwise, I would have loved taking a selfie for y'all. I would have loved to catch a Charmander or Squirtle in the court.
There's probably some rare Pokemon up in there.
Probably the rarest.
Clarence Thomas is on the back in there playing by himself.
This is why they don't allow phones in the court, because the justices want them all for themselves. Like, man, I dropped this lure. You can't cash in on that.
Have any of you guys experienced any, I don't want to ask too pointed of a question, emotions, any emotions at all about the case taking away from the music itself? Because it seems like, as important as this case is, it seems like some of you have already kind of hinted at, like, the case and the music are these different things, even though they're both kind of centering around the band. So what has that experience been like for you guys? Do you ever find yourselves wanting to talk about the music, but people just keep asking you about the legal case?
You guys are cool, so I've been talking to you guys, but I actually had a rule with the band as far as these like last round of interactions with the reporters and stuff. Basically, this is Joe. I have no interest in talking about the court case. All I want to talk about is the music. So if you have a question about the music, talk to me. If you don't have a question about the music, talk to Simon or anybody else you want to talk to. That's basically it. Like, I honestly, like I was saying earlier, I wanted to keep the two worlds separate. Right now, all I care about is our new EP. We have a new album. I'm going to be in Eugene working on, like, you know, getting the rest of the production done for the next 2 months. I don't really want to think about anything else but the music. So being here right now is more of an obligation, you know, sort of as part of the band and also for the documentary. But outside of that, I just want to work on the music, and that's what's important to me.
Let's talk about that then. What's can you give us the lowdown on the EP?
Yeah, the EP is five songs, four full songs, and then one song's an acoustic. And basically, I feel like it's some of the more developed and just, you know, heartfelt music that we've worked on. This current version of the band is brand new. So for Yuya, it's the first songs he's worked on, and I think you've picked the right songs to work on. But for the rest of the band, I feel like we really wanted to make the music say something but also speak for itself. So that we remind people we're not just a Supreme Court band. We're not a band that's for the lawyers or even for like the anime kids. We're musicians. We want to play music. We want to make music that our singer enjoys, me, the guitarist enjoys, and Simon. I mean, so everybody wants to just put a piece of themselves into it. And so the EP is, it's got a couple of political songs, a couple of like almost love songs, some fun songs. It's a good time. And so far, everybody who's listened to it, like, you know, friends, family, they all loved it. So it's going to be good. It's going to come out on Monday, tomorrow, I guess, Monday, January 16th on Martin Luther King Day. And it'll be available on, Simon?
iTunes, Amazon, CD Baby. It's just a digital release for now. And the name of the EP is The Band Who Must Not Be Named. And right now, even though it's just a digital EP, like Joe said, there's a lot of great content, a lot of great songs on it. We're going to release a special print edition in a couple of months, and it's going to be packaged together with pieces of origami paper, along with instructions on how to fold your own paper crane, because there's this Japanese kind of mythology that says if you fold 1,000 paper cranes, your wish will come true. So we're hoping that over the course of our tour that that we'll collect 1,000 paper cranes all across this country, and we want justice to prevail at the Supreme Court, obviously with our trademark case, but hopefully throughout the tenure of whatever happens at the White House as well, and whatever happens in Congress and state legislatures. We want society to kind of start experiencing justice. And so we'll collect them all and hopefully do some cool art with thousands of paper cranes for our full album release later this year.
You guys are awesome. Smart. You guys are getting like 1,000 people to fold 1,000 cranes. I just end up doing that by myself and getting frustrated.
Well, technically, we'll probably have multiple ones in per CD, so we just need 100 people to fold all of them. All right, there you go.
This is why I need to start my own band, so I can get people to fold my cranes for me.
Hey, we'll get some KBOO volunteers on it. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This is why you guys are going all the way to Supreme Court. You guys got the big ideas.
And Simon's really stubborn.
I don't know. I just say get ready for a new sound from this Lance, I think. It's a lot more melodic and a lot more poppy and dancey. And I've listened to all the albums before I went to audition for these guys, and we've come up with a really cohesive sound, I think, and it's a really, I like it. It's less disco pop and more of the modern era pop rock that is more conducive to, you know, mainstream music now. And in regards to the music being separate from the case, I mean, it does bother me a little bit when I see these reports saying, you know, Slants are not known for their music, they're only known for their case. And so I feel like that diminishes our music, and so we're having to work twice as hard to get our music out there and have it stand on its own.
But you know, the reality is that that kind of perception is not just about the trademark case. Like early on in our career when we first started, people would say, oh, they're more known for being Asian than about their music. And they would comment about our ethnicities. And then when we started playing anime conventions, they're like, oh, it's the band that plays anime conventions. But like, the story should be about our music first and foremost. All these other things stem from it. And our music is certainly influenced by these experiences, and we kind of fold that into our art. But we want to be known as the band that plays awesome music that gets you dancing, that's hooky, that's catchy, and that's fun. And what we love about the newer songs that are coming out on this EP and the songs that we've been writing for our album is that they're actually a lot of fun to play too. And so, I can't wait to share them with everyone.
That was Portland dance rock band The Slants. Special thanks to band members Simon Tam, Joe Jang, Yuya Matsuda, and Ken Shima for taking the time out of their busy Supreme Court schedule to talk to us all the way from Washington, D.C., and for sharing their latest album, The Band That Must Not Be Named. You can find the new album on iTunes, Amazon, and CD Baby. You can find out more about The Slants at theslants.com or on the socials at The Slants. On our last episode of Pacific Underground, we spoke with singer and activist Nobuko Miyamoto about the 1973 album A Grain of Sand, Music for the Struggle by Asians in America by Yellow Pearl. She wrote and recorded the album with Chris Ajima, and it's now regarded as the first album of Asian American music. From the album Grain of Sand, here's Imperialism's Just Another Word for Hunger by Yellow Pearl.
It's just another word for hunger, taking from you what you need. It's just another word for hunger. When it's time to for prison.
from what you need. It's just another word for prison. Lock you up and throw away the key. Lock you up. Throw away the key. It's just another word. It's just another word. What does it mean? Tell me, what does it mean? It means struggle.
Listening to Pacific Underground. Thank you very much to our guests this month, Douglas Choi and The Slants. And of course, thank you to Chops for our theme music. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get all of our latest audio. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud at Pacific Underground. Check out our Facebook and Twitter at PAC Underground or on our website at pacificunderground.org. Pacific Underground is a production of KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Thank you to KBOO's AM News and Public Affairs Director, Derek Crooks, and to KBOO Community Radio for the studio space, love, and support. And before I sign off here, I gotta make sure to wish everyone a happy Lunar New Year, and a special shout out to all my fellow roosters. To take us out, here's Grandma's Kitchen by rapper Jason Chu featuring Olivia Tai. Jason Chu just released the Lunar New Year themed video for this song this week. Watch it when you need a smile, because the grandma is hilarious.
奶奶在家里我只要给你打电话
You know, say hello.
OK.
This is Grandma's Kitchen. Pictures of the grandkids when we was infants. A herbal medicine for every symptom, from indigestion to bad intestines. No need to test it, Grandma suggests it. My family's dressed fashionably. Forget Paris, our style comes from PhDs. I mean, cell phone holsters, polos, jeans, comb overs, even khaki pants with the pleats. Uncle used to tease, I was a fat kid. Now when we at the table, he be like, rap kid. But Uncle's business is doing under average. But Chinese families know how to manage that. After dinner, you know he and Pop's gonna talk. And a check change hands between some grown-up folk. That's family law. When family calls, it's family's job to pick family up. Brought his white girlfriend. She uses chopsticks and even speaks Mandarin. Grandma's impressed, and yes, before they left, she took a photo so that she could show them off to her friends. Kid table, sitting with your rich cousins. You got the Benzo, AMG 6 cousins. Your mom face, her look really says something. Yale just accepted, you're really smart cousin. There's beef, duck, and fishes. Various conditions and other mean dishes. When fam come together, it's always delicious. We learned that inside of Grandma's kitchen.
We're here. We're here for
Grandma. I still don't got a girlfriend. I know you're waiting on a baby. I don't know, man. Every time she asks the same question, then drop a red envelope, I'm stunting. Ah, Grandma really loved to show us off. But if you're white, you might think that she's ignoring us. We don't hug and kiss to demonstrate love. But bragging about us, she'll talk your ear right off. Grandma showed me love's more than the words we say. I never spoke Chinese, still we communicate. Every time we ate, she gon' refill my plate. My favorite dumplings and the buns with sesame. Shelf stocked with Asian DVD dramas. Vacay to Beijing, she bought fake Prada. MSG products, jasmine tea, hard candy. Calling me endlessly, that's my grandmama.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Friday, January 27th, 2017. The Doomsday Clock, maintained by an organization of atomic scientists, has inched closer to midnight based on the words of a single person, Donald Trump. This is the first time in the 70-year history of the clock that the hand of the clock has been moved based on one single person's words. The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, Science and Security Board said that the president's quote, intemperate statements, lack of openness to expert advice, and questionable cabinet nominations have already made a bad international security situation worse. In the 7 days since he has taken office, Donald Trump has carried out 45 controversial actions targeting journalists, Muslims, Mexicans, refugees, and immigrants. He has cut funding to women's clinics in other countries and has threatened to pull out of the UN Convention on the Rights of Women, as well as the Convention on the Rights of the Child. He declared his inauguration day a national day of patriotic devotion, lied about the number of people who attended, then accused the media of lying when they showed that his statement was false. The outrageous claims made by Donald Trump, along with attempts to stifle the media and place gag orders on federal agencies like the EPA, has led some commentators to make parallels between Trump and authoritarian regimes in other parts of the world. Many have quoted Hannah Arendt, who wrote about liberal Germans in the 1930s who focused on trying to counter obvious falsehoods that were pushed by the Nazi Party instead of realizing that the lies were in fact promises about the genocide to come. In Florida, the Miami-Dade municipality caved in to a threat by Donald Trump and said they will no longer be a sanctuary city in response to his threat to pull federal funding. Other cities' mayors, like in Berkeley and Portland, have vowed to stand against the threat and remain a refuge in which all are welcome. Hundreds of thousands of people have signed a petition to force Donald Trump to release his tax returns, and another petition is calling for his impeachment for receiving payments from foreign governments in violation of the Constitution. Thousands of scientists are planning a march on Washington in early February to defend fact-based science. In Portland this weekend, a march for civil rights and racial justice will be held tomorrow afternoon, led by the NAACP of Portland. And at noon tomorrow, water protectors and defenders will gather at Pioneer Square to stand up against the Dakota Access Pipeline, which had been put to rest by President Obama, but was revived this week by an executive order of Donald Trump. That's it for the KBOO News at Noon. Tune in today and every weekday at 5 p.m. for more local, national, and international news produced by volunteer news teams right here in our Portland studios. For KBOO News, I'm Jenka Soderberg.
¶¶ KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Fix-It Fair, starting at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday, January 28th at George Middle School in Portland. Fix-It Fairs bring people together to learn simple and effective ways to save money and be healthy at home this winter. They feature exhibits and workshops from numerous community partners throughout the day in both English and Spanish on topics such as food and nutrition, community resources, recycling, and more. Again, that's the Portland Fix-It Fair on Saturday, January 28th from 9:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at George Middle School, 10,000 North Burr Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 34th Annual Real Music Film Series taking place January 13th through February 5th at the Northwest Film Center. New works and classics are featured this year, including The Jazz Loft According to W. Eugene Smith, Mose Allison, Ever Since I Stole the Blues, How Sweet the Sound, The Blind Boys of Alabama, the Les Blank film about Leon Russell called A Poem is a Naked Person, and many, many more. Again,